and welcome to Crosstalk. I'm Peter Lavelle. Is U.S. President Barack Obama still an honorable recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize? To be fair, he inherited two wars when assuming office. But he has also a new war on his watch, and that is Libya. Should Obama's Peace Prize be revoked? And should politicians be barred from future consideration? To discuss the issues around Barack Obama's Nobel Peace Prize, I'm joined by Bill Snyder in Washington. He is a distinguished senior fellow and resident scholar at Third Way. In London, we have Tariq Ali. He is a writer and filmmaker. And in Knoxville, we have Don Williams. He is the editor and publisher of New Millennium Writings. And another member of our Crosstalk team, Yelena Hunger. All right, gentlemen, this is Crosstalk. That means you can jump in anytime you want. Bill Snyder, as I pointed out in the introduction, Barack Obama inherited two wars. Okay, fair enough. He didn't start them. A lot of people criticize his escalation of the war in Afghanistan, and Libya is truly his war. I mean, Nobel Peace Prize and all those noble words, and we'll go to some of those words later in the program, and being a war president, it's very toxic. It's not a good mix, and either he should give it back or it should be revoked. What do you think?
Well, that has not been discussed in the United States, and let me point out one thing. His administration does not call Libya a war. It says it's a kinetic action. It's a time-limited objective to try to save people's lives. They do not think of this as a war. In fact, they don't even use the word regime change, even though the president has said an objective is to get Gaddafi out of power. So they would not even acknowledge that this is a war.
Okay, Tariq, if I'm going to you in London, is that a lot of newspeak? I mean, this is a war. If you look what's going on the ground, it's a war. And I don't care if American media doesn't want to call it that or the American White House. It's a war. And this is a man that was given a Nobel Peace Prize.
It is a war. He was given the Nobel Peace Prize where the Nobel Committee knew full well that in his election campaign he had said he is going to escalate the war in Afghanistan, which he has. He has had more drone attacks on Pakistan than even Bush ordered. In fact, more drone attacks under Obama than in the 8 previous years of the Bush administration. So they knew all that he was going to do this when they gave him a prize. But they were so relieved to be relieved of Bush that they were drooling at the mouth at the sight of Obama and essentially couldn't wait to hand him the prize. I mean, to be fair, even he was slightly embarrassed. But Peter, they don't go in for revoking these prizes. They wallow in their mistakes. And I don't think any Nobel Prize recipient is going to give it back either.
Okay, Don Williams, if I go to you in Knoxville, I think, you know, to be fair to President Obama, I think a lot of us understanding American foreign policy, Republican or Democrat, that America has a tendency to go to war and frequently. But I think a lot of us thought that Obama wouldn't go into dumb wars like Bush went into dumb wars. Iraq was completely unnecessary, okay? And I would argue, and a lot of other people in the world, a growing coalition of the willing, I would call it, is against this outside intervention into Libya. What do you think about that?
Well, Peter, I think comparisons to Iraq are odious. Start with what's true and what's not. President Obama was forthright in telling America and the world why we must intervene in Libya. One might disagree with his decision, but who could doubt the evidence that he used to build the case to oppose the bloodbath? It was everywhere before our eyes. This was not true of Bush and Iraq 8 years ago. The comparison, as I say, is odious. The reasons Bush concocted for going to war didn't pass the sniff test. Bush and Cheney told the world that Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, that he was giving them to terrorists, that we would be greeted as liberators. They hinted broadly that Saddam was in on 9/11, and none of this was true. Now, if my friends on the right want to believe Bush and Cheney uttered such things in good faith, they're welcome to that. But still, these were somebody's lies, manifestly obtained through bribery. A man named Curveball, codenamed Curveball, just last in the recent few weeks has acknowledged that he lied. There was a lot of evidence that a man named Al-Libi, lied and probably.
Well, okay, but you know, Don, I'm not accusing Mr. Obama of lying. Okay, I'm not yet, anyway. If I go to Bill, I mean, if we still see, you know, if we see a UN resolution about an embargo of arms to rebels, and now we see the slippery slope of, oh, now it's not called the war, it's not intervention, there's no talk of boots on the ground, but there was no talk of arming people as well, and it is not clearly identified who these people are. So I'm not calling the President of the United States a liar, not this president, but there is this tendency of slippery, it's a slippery slope into a war, full-out war. This is what I'm getting at, and this is why I'm talking about the Nobel Peace Prize. This is not an accidental war now at this point.
No one will deny that there are a lot of risks in doing what the president is doing. We are getting involved in a civil war. That's always dangerous. And this could be a very slippery slope. The president is certainly aware of that, but he saw an opportunity to avert an impending humanitarian disaster. Within a day in Libya, there could have been a slaughter, which was promised by Gaddafi, of hundreds of thousands of people, the resistance in that country. He saw that the United States might have the ability to make a difference, that other countries were willing to act, and that was an opportunity he was unwilling to pass up, despite the very real risks that you describe.
Okay, Tariq, let's continue with Bill's logic. So the Americans just want to look virtuous in all of this, but there is a possibility there could be a lot of massacres down the road if this isn't managed well, and there's nothing to indicate that it is being managed very well. The international community is tripping itself into a civil war where it has no idea what the outcome is going to be.
This is exactly right, and I would say, to be perfectly frank, Peter, in my opinion, this has very little to do with civilian casualties or the fear of civilian casualties. After all, no one from the West suggested imposing a no-fly zone over Gaza. No one suggested imposing a no-fly zone when Lebanon was invaded and attacked a few years ago. Essentially, what we are witnessing is a Western intervention in Libya to try and take the initiative in the entire region back from the people on the ground and to build up the credibility of the West. I mean, only yesterday, Bill Gates said that the despot in Yemen, who, by the way, is killing quite a few people every single day in that country, should stay in power. The Saudis have been permitted to invade Bahrain and are carrying out a wave of repression in that country. A war in Libya, the intervention in Libya, is part of the counteroffensive to wrest the initiative back. And Gaddafi, who is not an intelligent leader, to put it mildly, played into the hands of the West by bombing his own people and sending his troops in instead of either negotiating or doing the decent thing and quitting power. So he's played into the hands of the West. They've taken the advantage of that, trying to get the initiative back. And the results, we don't know. I think what is quite likely is that at the very least, Libya will now be partitioned. Mm. Like Iraq was partitioned with a no-fly zone after the first Gulf War, and the Kurdish territories essentially became a U.S. protectorate, this could happen now in the Lebanon, and the consequences of that are unpredictable at the moment. It might work, but the more likely chances are that it'll end up as a total disaster.
Don, if I can go back to you in Knoxville, Tariq Ali brings up a very good point, is that there are other actors in the Obama administration, and it's very duplicitous. Well, a lot of people would see a lot of double standards where the United States will stand up, take a virtuous stand, and protect civilians. What civilians are still very unclear, actually, but it won't do it for other people in the region. And I think that, you know, a lot of people outside of the United States would say the Gazans really could have used a no-fly zone when the Israelis were committing atrocities against the Gazan population there. Double standards. It still smells of double standards, doesn't it?
Well, you make a good point, and so does Tariq. And I would only say that just because Obama hasn't acted previously to prevent the slaughter of innocent folks doesn't necessarily mean he's not acting in good faith in this instance. I wonder what my friend would say if we had seen a bloodbath in Benghazi, then what would the criticism of Obama be at that point? I think he had to act. I mean, let's face it, there is a wave sweeping the Middle East and North Africa, and I think what's needed is a clear Obama doctrine. I don't think it's something he should rush into establishing, but he's got to tiptoe up to those waters, take a good deep look, and then dive into some, because credit or blame will accrue to him no matter what happens.
Okay, Bill, it's interesting. I think there,
Go ahead, Bill. I don't think the president really intended to promulgate an Obama doctrine. He didn't say this was a precedent, that this is a new principle for intervention. What he said, this was a specific case where we could intervene and make a difference and save lives. You could start talking about Syria, which is, after all, killing its own people. You could talk about Gaza. You could talk about a lot of places. The president says, we're talking about Libya, where we saw the opportunity to act and make a difference. Every other situation is different, and many of them, like Syria, are much more complicated. So the president didn't seem to want to say this is a new Obama doctrine.
Okay, Tadek, if I go to you before we go to the break here, I think there is a new doctrine here. I think there is an Obama doctrine coming into play, and it's the same thing as the Bush doctrine, except for we really don't want to put troops on the ground, okay? And I'd like to point out to everyone on the panel, Hillary Clinton says, well, we're not going to intervene into Syria yet. Go ahead, Tadek.
Well, I think there is no new doctrine. We have had this line taking place since Bill Clinton was in office. Bush continued it, and Bush lied his way on Iraq so blatantly that it put people off the United States for a long time. Obama is now carrying on in the same way and trying to win public opinion back to the idea of Western wars of intervention cloaked in humanitarian logic. I don't accept the fact that this is a war in good faith. I think this is an opportunist war fought in order to give the West an initiative in a part of the world where they had already lost it. And I think...
All right, Tadek, I'm going to jump in right now, and after a short break, we'll continue our discussion on Obama's Nobel Prize. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're talking about Obama's Nobel Peace Prize. But first, let's see what Russians think about all of this.
Should it be revoked? 2 years ago, the newly elected American President Barack Obama was awarded with the Nobel Peace Prize for his extraordinary efforts to strengthen international diplomacy and cooperation between peoples. But now, as the U.S. intervenes in Libya, many wonder if this award should be taken away. The Russian Public Opinion Research Center asked citizens what the international community should do about Libya. 62% of the respondents say Libyan turmoil is exclusively a domestic problem and foreign countries should not interfere. And another 27% believe international community should step in to stop the civil war there. Thus, the ongoing conflict in Libya has once again stressed the controversy of awarding President Obama, the U.S. Commander-in-Chief, with the Peace Prize. Peter?
Okay, gentlemen, let's go back to the Nobel Prize here. I'd like to listen to some of the words that Barack Obama gave the committee as he picked up his award in 2009. Let's listen to what he had to say.
And so I come here with an acute sense of the costs of armed conflict. I face the world as it is and cannot stand idle in the face of threats to the American people. For make no mistake, evil does exist in the world.
Well, if I can go to you, Bill, I've always called Obama the commander in speech. I mean, we have to give him that at least. He speaks very well. But has he tainted the award? Because there's always expediency. I mean, he is elected by a group of people. There is something called, even I admit, the national interest. He's going to act in the national interest as he understands it for the people that voted for him. Okay, and everything else is secondary. Okay, so. Okay, you got the Nobel Prize. Well, sorry, I'm still going to be Commander-in-Chief. I mean, doesn't it, does it taint the award?
Look, the award has already got a few taints on it long before Barack Obama.
Oh, yeah,
Yasser Arafat.
Or Henry Kissinger, okay? I mean, that's what a lot of other people would say,
too. Or Henry Kissinger.
Okay, but still, in this case...
Yes, exactly.
Here,
when the prize was given to Obama, Americans were surprised and shocked.
What do you think about that, Don? What do you think?
Vastly premature.
Do you think do you think it has the same value now as it does back in 2009? Go ahead.
Yes, I do, because it has been tainted in the past. And also, let me just point out that Obama inspired the world just by getting elected. I know he's got a lot of detractors now, especially in my part of the country. But he did inspire the world. Just getting elected prevented a person who was singing bomb, 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 Iran, and pointing to 100 years of possible warfare in Iraq. Point of fact is, Obama's put fewer boots on the ground than nearly any of our recent presidents. Now he might, who knows, that could change, because there is a lot of turmoil in the world. But I don't think you can fault him for acting in Libya. There's a cost in violence, a cost in human lives to not acting. And when you've got people marching with banners and people saying, we want democracy, I think you have to be cognizant of that and have a certain empathy for those folks who could see heartbreak and horror fall from the skies if we did not act.
Okay, Tariq, if I can go to you, I mean, giving the Nobel Peace Prize to a sitting president that really hadn't done anything to that point, I mean, wasn't it just, like you pointed out, just thank goodness he's not George Bush, and just hoping that a preemptive war is coming out of Washington would slow down or maybe come to an end? I mean, was it an award of hope? Because it certainly, those hopes are in tatters right now. I mean, Tomahawk missiles being fired at who knows what in Libya today.
I don't think it was an award of hope. It was an award of wishful thinking and an award of sycophancy. I mean, if you look at the list of Nobel Prize winners, you've had a lot of U.S. presidents on the list. The award has been pretty tainted. I don't know whether you're aware of this, Peter, but in 1936, someone suggested Adolf Hitler for the Peace Prize. This was, of course, not taken up, but he was suggested. Mahatma Gandhi never was awarded the Peace Prize. So it is there's a very interesting Norwegian jurist, Frederick Heffermal, who's written a book on the Nobel Peace Prize, and he says that the Peace Prize, virtually from the beginning, violated Alfred Nobel's instructions, that Nobel had said that the Peace Prize should only go to those people actively engaged in peace. And it's been hijacked by retired Norwegian politicians and a Cold Warrior academic from the past who hand it out at will. And there was a lot of criticism in Norway when Obama got it and when others got it. I mean, Kissinger is a case in point. But numerous other people have got it, and Gabriel Garcia Marquez himself, a prize winner of Nobel Prize winner on literature, said it would be more accurate to call it the Nobel War Prize. Then they could give it to whoever they wanted, whenever.
Okay, Bill, if I can go back to you.
George Bush actually got two people.
Go ahead, Bill.
George Bush got two people the Nobel Peace Prize. Al Gore, whom he defeated, Gore got more votes in 2000, and Barack Obama. I mean, there was a real sense that there was so much relief and so much anger at George Bush that they gave it to two different people. The one who really deserved the Nobel Peace Prize, who didn't get it, and I'm sure he's eating his heart out, is Bill Clinton. And he, of course, did make war in Kosovo, but that war was seen as another humanitarian intervention. But Clinton has probably done more for peace than any recent president. Jimmy Carter has the Nobel Peace Prize.
Okay, but I mean, if I go to Don,
Bill Clinton deserved the Peace Prize. This guy imposed sanctions.
Yes.
Maintained sanctions in Iraq. Madeleine Albright, his Secretary of State, defended the killing of at least a million Iraqi children because of sanctions, saying it was necessary, imposed a no-war zone on Iraq, destroyed virtually everything, so softening the country for Bush and Cheney to take over. He deserved the Peace Prize. Give us a break.
Okay, Don, what about former politicians? Let's look at Jimmy Carter, because Jimmy Carter, a lot of people criticize him for some of his thoughts since his presidency. But I think it's fair to say that even his detractors while he was president say he's done good. He's done the best job a former president could ever do for peace and helping just poor people in general, all the way to recognizing different issues around the world that sometimes the media forgets or sometimes gives a certain view on that maybe is very for American and Western interests, okay, when I'm thinking about the Middle East. But is that a case where maybe a former politician has done well? Because one of my theses is that politicians probably shouldn't get it at all. Go ahead, Don.
No, I think there's a lot of value in giving them to former politicians. It sets an example for others who leave office and can do good works, even though their power base no longer exists in a political sense. But so many people get this award, though, who have no power base except whatever power base the people give them or international opinion gives them. I think of, in 2004, Wangari Maathai, pardon my pronunciation, but who started this amazing movement to plant trees in Kenya and transform the country and made life easier for, especially for women who had to gather the firewood, and is really helping transform the world into a greener place. Without the Nobel, who knows what might have become of her and her movement. Shirin Ebadi, a disbarred judge whose human rights advocacy in Iran for women and children was suppressed. What might have become of her without the world's attention? I think the Nobel Prize definitely serves a wonderful function in the world. Yes, like anything else, it's subject to abuse, and I think the jury, frankly, is still out on Obama. His legacy is yet to be made. But again, there is a cost in not acting.
Okay, Teddy, what do you think? I mean, I could, you know, in reflecting upon when he got the award and then looking at his presidency since then, it's still, the Nobel Prize, Peace Prize, is still very, the discourse of Western international relations is still there. It recognizes that as the paradigm. And I think a lot of people in the world see it, I'll be very blunt, as kind of a white people's award when it comes to politics.
It is totally dominated by people who essentially defend Western interests everywhere. I mean, look at the latest one. Occasionally, they give it to the right people. I agree, Shirin Ebadi is a case in point. But this Chinese guy, they gave it to Liu Xiaobi in the last Nobel Peace Prize. It's quite astonishing that, because though he is in prison, and he shouldn't be in prison, let me make that very clear. The Chinese government are foolish for keeping him in prison. But his political beliefs are what? One, that China should have been colonized for 300 years by a Western power or Japan in order for it to learn civilization, that the Iraq war was justified, that Kerry was wrong to criticize Bush on the Iraq war, that Afghanistan is justified, that the Vietnam and Korean wars were wars against totalitarianism, and that is why good. And this is the guy who gets the Nobel Peace Prize. So, you know, it's obvious that the motive is ideological. And the chief of the prize winners, Jagland, an ex-Norwegian politician, said we wanted to teach China a lesson. Actually, it's had exactly the opposite impact.
It's very interesting. I mean, a lot of people say that the Chinese dissident that did win the award irritated a lot of people. But Julian Assange, Bill, irritates a lot of people too, but he's considered a villain by the United States, but a hero for so many other people, an empowering hero, by the way, and he's certainly not a person that's creating war or promoting conflict.
Look, the Chinese dissident was not given the Nobel Peace Prize because of his views on all these previous issues. He was given his Nobel Peace Prize because of his stand in defiance of Chinese authorities, and it worked. I mean, it created a lot of attention to that issue. It wasn't because of things he's written in the past. The Nobel Peace Prize does best when it's clearly an award for human rights activism. But when it gets involved in political controversies on the left or on the right, it's always going to be disputed.
Okay, Don, I'm going to give you the last word on this. Do you think that Obama it's incumbent upon him to make good on his words of being a peacemaker? He's still got a little time left in his first term.
Well, I hope it's possible. I hope it's possible. I think the jury is out. I think Obama's legacy is yet to be made. He's only been in office for 2 years, a little over, and they've been very distracting years. The whole world faced economic decline. He's been distracted every which way, and So I think we just have to kind of give him the benefit of the doubt.
All right, gentlemen, I'm going to have to jump in. We've run out of time. Let's give Mr. Obama the benefit of the doubt. Many thanks to my guests today in Washington, London, and in Knoxville. And thanks to our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, crosstalk rules. Mm-hmm.